When I thought about this, thought of a couple of occasions, but one, it stuck in my mind because it leads on to what I want to say. It was 1973. Okay, I started my second year of my medical biochemistry course at Birmingham University. And we did a lot of chemistry, did a lot of organic chemistry as part of that. And I found myself in that October, first lab lesson, workbench, next to somebody who I hadn't met before, even though it was my second year. There's a lot of people doing the chemistry course and we were joining them, probably nearly 100 people. And this person was talking to the person opposite them and they were talking about football. Didn't particularly interest me. And she mentioned Sunderland. So Graham will know the context, 1973 Sunderland, and why she was in the September very pleased and telling everybody, because what did Sunderland do in 1973? Oh, he doesn't sound very pleased. That's possibly because he's a Newcastle supporter. Who did they beat?
They beat Leeds United.
Okay. Right, okay, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a bit like the quiz last night, isn't it, Joe? Yes. Yeah, facts that you do remember. But so I turned to her and said, oh, do you come from Sunderland then? Because she didn't sound like him at all. And, and she said, no, I come from Marple. I said, really? I said, and I could... When I was at home then, where my parents lived, I could see Marple from my bedroom window. And so began a friendship. And it turned out that she was a Christian, but a lapsed Christian, a very much lapsed, struggling Christian with everything going on at university. But interestingly was that fact that she had obviously knew about God and that God had meant a lot to her, but was struggling, that God used in my life to challenge me about what it meant to be a Christian. And several months after meeting her and meeting other Christians, I became a Christian towards the end of my second year. And that's life-changing. It certainly was for me, very much life-changing. And that's what we're going to be thinking about in this series. People, encounters with Jesus, perhaps through somebody else, but actually then having that personal encounter, meeting the risen Christ. Different events that happened post the resurrection, as recorded in the Gospels. People who had already met with Jesus in one way and had started to follow him, started to take on board some of the things that he was saying, but then encountered him in a totally different way that changed their lives. Because Jesus was alive, is alive. So one of the issues that will probably come out through each message is that kind of evidence, if you like, for the resurrection. Things that are, I suppose, factual in that sense, that we can lean on as to Jesus being alive. I'm sure that we all read Paul's letter in the magazine and his challenge, his question about the resurrection events, this time of year that we celebrate year in, year out, and whether they just become events that are familiar and that we just accept and only think about at this time of year, or is the risen Jesus a daily reality, a moment by moment reality? Is the resurrection something that you accept solely by faith? Or is it something that you are fully convinced about and can argue for, if you like? How often are you challenged about whether Jesus is actually alive today? I spent most of this year being challenged, at least on a weekly basis, about that, by a couple of lads in one of my Year 7 RS groups. We've been looking all year about belief and truth and then looking at Jesus and facts about his life and the Christian belief that he is alive today. And these two lads, very bright lads, very good mathematicians in particular, but very into their science and all the Big Bang and the theories and planets and all sorts of stuff that they would come up as arguments for the fact that Jesus couldn't have come back to life. I managed to convince them that there was evidence that he did actually live at one stage as a human being. But their questions really challenged me to think, how do I answer this in a way that doesn't dismiss where they're at and their understanding and all that they have learnt so far, in a way that makes them think, is this possible that Jesus can be alive today? Are there things that we can rely on, perhaps as evidence, if you like? You know, there are lots and lots of books that have been written. Josh McDowell is one of the main ones, Evidence That Demands a Verdict. People who have written about the resurrection accounts and gone into all the background and the documentation and everything about them and been convinced in one sense that, yes, this could have happened. And there are things that if you're going to use the books that are there, some are standard things that you will have heard before, but there are a couple of things that were written in the book that I thought, I don't remember ever being made to think about that. One was the fact that, and we'll read about it in a minute, that when they went into the tomb and Jesus had gone, the body was gone, the grave clothes were there, the strips of cloth were there that Jesus' body had been wrapped in, but the head cloth had been folded neatly and placed deliberately by the strips that had covered the rest of his body. And apparently it was Jewish custom that when you had a meal and you had a napkin, that if you screwed it up and put it down like that, that meant that you'd really enjoyed that meal and that you'd like to come again. But if you took the napkin and folded it neatly and placed it down deliberately, it meant, I'm done with this, I'm not coming again. So the significance of the folded cloth was that Jesus saying, I'm done with this, I'm done with death, I've conquered death, I'm not coming back to that tomb. I'm not here anymore. The other is the fact that Mary, who we're going to be looking at this morning, Mary Magdalene, was the first person to discover, the first witness to the fact that Jesus' body was no longer in the tomb. And women in those days, and probably for quite a long time afterwards, were considered to be unreliable witnesses. Anything they said was just, you know, just emotional twiddle-twaddle, not to be taken seriously. And yet the first person to discover the resurrection, really, Jesus' body gone, was a woman, was a group of women, and then Mary on her own. And the fact that John, as a man, and Luke as well, recorded that, and saying that a woman was the first person to witness the post-Easter events is significant and lends evidence to the fact that Jesus is alive. Things to consider and think about. Evidence that points towards belief in a risen Jesus. But it's only when we encounter him personally that we're fully convinced, isn't it? I'm going to read from John's Gospel, John chapter 20, and the first 18 verses. John 20, verses 1 to 18. So if you have a Bible, it would be good for you to follow. So John writes that early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the entrance. So she came running. She went running off to Simon Peter and the other disciple, who was John himself, the one Jesus loved, and said, they've taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we don't know where they've put him. So Peter and the other disciple started for the tomb. Both were running, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent over and looked in at the strips of linen lying there, but he did not go in. Then Simon Peter, who was behind him, arrived and went into the tomb. He saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as a burial cloth that had been round Jesus' head. The cloth was folded up by itself, separate from the linen. Finally, the other disciple who had reached the tomb first also went inside. He saw and believed. But they still did not understand from Scripture that Jesus had to rise from the dead. Then the disciples went back to their homes. But Mary stood outside the tomb, crying. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white, seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "They've taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they've put him." At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. "Woman," he said, "why are you crying? Who is it you're looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you carried him away, tell me where you've put him, and I will get him." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned to him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I have not yet returned to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I'm returning to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them what he'd said, that he had said these things to her. John writes very kind of specifically here. There's a bit more detail than there is in the other gospel accounts of the same event. Right at the beginning, where he says it was early in the morning, he then puts, "while it was still dark." Darkness and light are very much themes of John's gospel. The word light, particularly in the first three chapters, appears something like 20-odd times. But I think that here John is suggesting, obviously he's writing this afterwards, isn't he? You know, after everything that's happened, this is his account of all that has happened. I think he's very much suggesting that there's a lot more going on here with Mary in relation to darkness in particular. It wasn't just dark in terms of it was early in the morning and it was a gloomy day, but the darkness of her life and her situation. If you remember, and the things that we know from other gospel accounts of her, she was someone who'd experienced a lot of darkness in her life. She'd been demon-possessed, and Jesus had cast out those seven demons from her life. It's possible, although some people, because there's a number of people called, number of women called Mary, but that she was the one who had a particularly dark, perhaps we might describe it, lifestyle. And again, that was something that when she met Jesus, that she gave up. Jesus had taken her out of that, given her new hope. Hope that would have been dashed as she, along with a number of other women, were the ones who watched and saw everything that happened to Jesus in those final days, who saw much of the torture, who followed him as he carried the cross, who saw him and stayed as he was being crucified, who would have seen him die, and been taken down from the cross and then carried to the garden tomb. She would have seen all that and was coming that morning on a dark, dreary day to a scene that's dark and distressing. And it's as though perhaps that present reality that Mary's confronted with is taking her right back to how her life was before she had that first encounter with Jesus. The reality worsens, doesn't it, as Mary approaches the tomb. She sees the stones roll back and the body is gone. It's bad enough that Jesus had been crucified, but now the purpose that she had in going that morning to the tomb, which was taking herbs and spices to anoint the body and to keep it kind of smelling nice, that purpose was gone because there was no longer a body there. Like being kicked when you're already down. And yet we don't see Mary trying to avoid any of that, do we? Ignoring the full reality of what's going on. She sees it as it is at the tomb. And then she rushes to get the disciples who check things out for themselves, see that Mary is right, the body has gone. Being confronted by reality. I wonder how that works for you. Whether it's a small difficulty that crops up unexpectedly, that might challenge your faith, or something deeper, an ongoing situation that's difficult and dark. What do you do? Run in the opposite direction to focus on something else? Bury your head in the sand? The true reality is just too hard to face. Do you kind of then make up an alternative version that's more manageable? Are you totally disabled by the reality of whatever that situation is, that you can't function at all? Or do you face the reality, no matter how hard that feels to begin with? So Jesus encounters more, encounters more with Jesus when she's confronted by her reality, the reality of what's going on, and when she allows that herself to be confronted by it. She doesn't hide. She tries to make sense of it. She tries to understand. Contrast that with the disciples here in this description in verse 10. When it says the disciples went back, when they'd checked out what Mary had said and thought the tomb was empty, Peter and John and the other women who had been with Mary went back. They went back to their own homes. The disciples had come, they saw, didn't really get any answers or understand what was going on. They went off as though almost it didn't matter. Maybe if they'd stayed a bit longer with Mary instead of walking away, then maybe they'd have had their resurrection encounter with Jesus much sooner than they did. Not only do we need to face the reality of what might be going on in our lives, whatever that might mean for us, but we need to stay around with it long enough to see Jesus dealing with it in his way. Dealing with that possibly dark and difficult reality. So Mary, she's confronted by reality of the dark scene that John presents us with. Then, as she's left alone at the tomb, she's overwhelmed, blinded by that overwhelming sense of despair. Blinded by despair. You know, for Mary, the awfulness of that reality sends her kind of even further downwards emotionally and spiritually. All she can see is darkness. And John gives in his writing two things that were there and evident that she kind of missed, if you like, that could have, should have said to her, God's in this, it's all going to be okay. But because of how she was feeling, because of that being blinded by despair and the hopelessness she thought of the situation, she kind of missed them. You know, there's a couple of angels in the tomb. John describes them as angels. Obviously, he's writing after the event. But there are two angels sat there. Now, if they were called angels, they must have looked a bit different to, you know, Roy and Graham sat there. Been something about them, sorry. Sure Anita thinks you're an angel, honestly. But there must have been something about them. Some light of heaven. Yet Mary doesn't see it. She just says, the body's gone, have you taken it? Mary's not transformed by seeing them. She doesn't think, angels, maybe God's involved in this. You know, no, she's just blinded by her despair. So much that even when she turns and Jesus is stood there behind her, she thinks he's a gardener. Mary fails even to recognize the person she's been searching for. She misses Jesus. What about us? What will it take for us to see Jesus? To work through whatever it is that blinds us to the truth of who he is. And so to let his light transform our darkness. You know, I've been in that place where light at the end of the tunnel seems a long way off. Been in a tunnel where it seems to be bends. You know, and if there's a bend in a tunnel, you might know there's light because it's a tunnel. Okay, so there's going to be light somewhere. I've travelled on enough trains to know that. But you can't see it because there's a curve or a bend. Or been taking steps towards the light and it's getting closer and then suddenly something happens and you're back there, back at square one. The light seems further away. Prayer perhaps going seemingly unanswered for a long period of time can drive you down to that sense of despair. And when I was younger as a Christian, younger, really, I used to think it was wrong to be in that dark place, to doubt. You know, everything seemed black and white. You know, if you didn't, it was your fault. You know, if you didn't have enough faith to always believe that everything was going to work out okay. And I do believe that, never lost that sense of faith. And knowing that what it says now in this, okay, which is now my Bible, is true. But sometimes we can so be blinded by the reality of a situation, by the despair that brings, that we don't see the light of Jesus in that situation. But, you know, it can be that if you think you shouldn't doubt, you then don't face reality. And it's when you're not facing reality, or when you think that you shouldn't, that you won't discover God. I found that facing reality and accepting and confronting and realizing that that's how it is often the place where I find God. And God gets my attention. It's not that God hides away from us in those moments or wants to inflict distress on us. They're things that happen because we're in a world that's fallen. But it's in those times that we're almost forced to call out to God like never before. It's when we feel alone that others perhaps who've tried to help, but they can't really and they've left. It's then, like with Mary, on her own, that you can have that personal encounter with God. Psalm 23, probably one of the most famous portions of scripture that there is, says that God doesn't leave us in the dark valley of despair, but he leads and guides us through. And if we're blinded by despair for a while, that doesn't mean that God's given up, because he doesn't. That's not in his nature. But he's right there with us, holding on to us, so that the blindness won't destroy us or stay forever. but so that we can hear his voice again and be transformed through a renewed encounter with him. Like Mary. Mary was confronted by the reality of what was going on, blinded by despair, but then came her moment of being transformed because she encountered Jesus. You know, and in all the resurrection encounters that we will look at over the next few weeks, the experience of the people involved in one sense is the same. They show us what it's like to be encountering more of Jesus. But it's all different for each of them. They encountered Jesus, the risen Christ, in different ways because we are all different. For Mary, her darkness begins to lift when she recognizes the voice of Jesus. When Jesus says her name, when he says, Mary. John writes elsewhere in his gospel in chapter 10, verses 3 and 4. Jesus, he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. He goes on ahead of them. His sheep follow him because they know his voice. And that's crucial for Mary. You know, as we said, she didn't recognize that if God's angels were in the tomb, then surely the presence and light of Jesus of the Lord were there. She didn't recognize the resurrection body of Jesus standing in front of her either, but she did recognize his voice. All it took was that one word, Mary. All it took for Mary to encounter more of Jesus for her was for her to recognize him calling her name. And it might be that that hearing the voice of Jesus isn't the way that you encounter Jesus, whether it's for the first time or in a particularly dark and difficult situation, time of great need in your life. Might be that your encounter comes in a different way, ways in which we'll be looking at over the next few weeks. Maybe you need your eyes opening, which is what we're looking at next week. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 3, Paul writes these words of his own experience. Christ died for our sins according to the scriptures. He was buried, and he was raised to new life on the third day according to the scriptures. He appeared to Peter and then to the 12. Doesn't mention the women. After that, he appeared to more than 500 of the brothers and sisters at the same time. Then he appeared to James, then to all the apostles. And last of all, he appeared to me also. Jesus spoke Mary's name, and that was enough to lead her out of darkness into light and from despair into hope. Jesus still speaks today. Are we listening?